Hi, everybody. This is Bob Goodwin, and welcome to another episode of Career Club Live. You are going to love our guest today. But before we get to her, I wanted to encourage you to stop by career.club and check under the For Job Seekers section. We've got a bunch of new free resources available to people, including things like the three things that might be holding you back in your job search, effective way to answer what's your greatest weakness, and 10 tips and tricks and techniques to help you with your networking. So again, check out career.club under the section for job seekers. So as I said, I'm really excited about our guests today. So today I'm going to read this. We've got Kara Chenault-Reed. Kara is the leader of human resources for Koch Industries. And I'm really looking forward to her explaining to you just a little bit more about what Koch is. But she partners directly with their business and capability groups across the globe to connect all the diverse industries that make up the Koch portfolio to their shared vision. With over 120,000 employees, the human resources capability there helps advance their business visions and strategies while accelerating the application of the Koch framework, principle-based management. We're going to be talking a good deal about that because it really is their secret sauce. Kara and I met at SHRM 23 this year in Las Vegas, and I was just blown away by her vision, her professionalism, and maybe most of all, her grace. And so with that, Kara, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So where do we find you today? Where are you?
I am in Wichita, Kansas. I am in the headquarters of Koch Industries Incorporated, right here in the middle of the prairie, as you can see out my window.
Awesome. I do see that. It's pretty flat there, which leads me to my first question, which is, you're not from there. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Nashville, Tennessee, and then moved at a small child to right outside of Knoxville, Kingston, Tennessee. So in a small town outside of Knoxville. So yes, I'm a huge University of Tennessee fan. I've lived all over and been in many places, but continue to be a Vol fan.
Amen. Well, for people who follow me on LinkedIn, I also went to Tennessee, met my lovely wife at UT. So with you, you're kind of the thrills and foibles of being a Tennessee Vol fan.
With the good and the bad, right?
The good and the bad. Tell us just a little bit about your family, Kara.
Yeah, so I've actually been in Wichita now for going on 2 years, been in this particular position, but I've been with Koch for 18 years. And I've been married to John Reed for 31 years. 32. Mm-hmm. I messed that up. I'll be in trouble. 32 years. I have two grown daughters, Caroline and Camille. And so we one came with us and one stayed in Georgia.
Awesome. Now, did I read on LinkedIn that you guys are empty nesters now?
We are. We absolutely are. My youngest daughter, Camille, is a sophomore in college, and she attends Wichita State University here, lives on campus. So, yes, we are empty nesters and loving it.
Just real quickly, and maybe particularly since you guys are empty nesters now, what do you like to do when you're not doing your job in the daytime?
Yeah, we love to travel, and where we travel is to the beach. Every time we have an opportunity, we love to go to South Carolina coast, which is where my husband is originally from, South Carolina. And so love to go back to the beach and just have quiet time. That's what we like to do in our spare time. And I don't have a lot of hobbies. My kids have been my hobbies. You know, when you're not working, it's been kids, and it's a different kind of time spent with them. But I love that time when we can all be together, four of us, and travel and do things like that. But that's really where I've spent my time throughout my career. I haven't had any great hobbies, except for my kids and husband.
I was going to say, big job and raising kids. That sounds like enough to chew up all your waking hours. No doubt.
I need to figure out what I'm going to do after work, though, after I retire. And I need to have some hobbies. So I don't know what that's going to be.
Well, we'll talk about that in a bit. Now, Koch Industries is maybe this is just me, but it seems like it's like one of the biggest companies that people don't know. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier that there's 120,000 employees. Can you just share a little bit about kind of some of the businesses that Koch is, just to get people grounded in the business itself?
Yeah, and you're right. It's probably one of the best kept secrets. It was for me too when I joined Koch, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you know, it was established in 1940 by Frederick Koch, which is Charles Koch's father, who's currently our chairman and CEO. And we do have 120,000 employees, and they're in 60 different countries. and spread across the globe, and very diverse portfolio of products and services that we are in. And so, I think about how it's transitioned and changed since I joined, and it just seems to be a continual change and transformation. So, we own Georgia Pacific. You may be familiar with products, the consumer products, Dixie Plates, those kinds of things, Guardian Glass, Molex. So there's a lot of various different companies, and then also just the oil and gas. I mean, we've been in the oil and gas industry for years and running refineries. So it's a very unique company in that, you know, there's some branded companies in here and brands that we have, you know, that you would know, household names. But quite honestly, you know, most folks don't know who we are. And as I said, when I started, I didn't either. I didn't know who Koch Industries was. And so, but it's, you know, it truly is a company that's founded and on this principle-based management, and how I tell you, I think Koch has been most successful is through the application of principles of human progress. And that has been the unwavering commitment to how we work, how we make decisions, how we think about talent, and how we invest in businesses. And so just continue this. There's a continuous discontent with the current state or restlessness that would say we can always get better. And that's at the core of how Koch has continued to grow, transform, get in businesses, and get out of businesses.
Mm. Well, we're gonna talk about that. Definitely double click on this, because it is sort of the secret sauce of Koch, and no pun intended. And but you talked about like how you got to Koch, and I think your origin story is so instructive of just sort of the broader theme of Koch. So do you mind just kind of briefly sharing with folks how it is that you even came to Koch?
Yeah. And so what I'll start with telling you, so this is something that I've come to know now is just common practice. And the moment when you're living through it, I wasn't exactly sure what was going on. And so, as I had mentioned earlier, I was working for Kimberly-Clark, not necessarily looking for a new role. And someone from Koch had called me. I didn't know who Koch Industries was, and I was embarrassed that I didn't know. Went home and my husband's like, how do you not know who that is? But I came to an interview here in Wichita, Kansas. There was probably 10, 12 people around the table. There was no open position. There was no job. I kept asking for was there a job posting I need to apply to? Is there a role? Mm-hmm. And the answer was no, just come talk to us. We'll spend the day. And so I spent the day with, you know, 6 or 7 different companies, spent the whole day here. And throughout the interview process, asking, so what is the role? What's the role going to be? And because you want to know, am I a good fit for whatever this role is that you're looking for? And they spent a lot of time talking to me about who Koch was and how they make decisions and principles and values. And so I walked away. I was sitting in the airport that evening after an all-day interview with multiple of companies that I described. I was sitting in the airport, and it was funny. My phone rang. My husband said, okay, what is it? Where's the job? What is it? And I said, well, I don't know what it is. I don't know where it is. His next question was, did you not pay any attention to anything in the interview? And so I said, there's not a specific role. And so before I had made it home, I was living in Arkansas at the time, before I'd made it home, I had a call from one of the leaders who wanted to offer me a position. And it was a position of leading the talent acquisition group for one of the companies in Vista. And I just said, gosh, I'm not a talent acquisition, but that's not a space. I'm pretty hardcore general HR and manufacturing. And I said, I'm not so sure that's probably the right role. And he said, well, wait a minute. He said, we spent a lot of time talking to you. We're looking for strong leaders who come into the HR capability. And he said, and he walked me through the process. And we said, we sit around the table and we need to invest in talent in HR. And so he said, you are somebody that we think you can come in into multiple roles, but this is a role we think we want you to start in. And I said, well, are you sure? I hope I haven't oversold, because that is not what that's to build a talent acquisition capability for a global organization at the time. And it was daunting, because I thought, I'm stepping into something I don't know. But now, in hindsight, best decision I've ever made. Never looked back. I was intrigued. What was probably when I sat through the interview on my side of it, I was so intrigued with the people and the commitment to the principles. And so it was showing up in everything that they said and everything that they did and how they answered my questions. And so I was hooked. I thought if there's a shred of truth to this, I'm all in. And there absolutely was. And so for me, I've come to know that as the discovery process. At the time, I thought, this is crazy. I don't know how you're going to figure out, you know, if there's not a position. And so that's been the journey that has been Coke, because that's very common to how we think about talent today. And like I said, I experienced it firsthand. And what I've seen since is it's all about the individual, not so much about the role or the responsibilities or the job description. It's about the individual. And we've continued to live by that. And it is just, it just works. It's phenomenal when you think about the person and how they can fit in to what do they bring? You know, what if they're contribution motivated and they have some skills and some talents that we need, that's a perfect match. And then it's turning them loose. That's the piece that's so empowering. I had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with some of our interns this year, Bob, and it was a rather large group that we had brought into Wichita from across all of our companies. And it was so funny. We were sitting there having this conversation about getting ready to get their offers coming into Coke, and they're so worked up about making the right decision. And I had a really good person. This gentleman asked me a really good question. He goes, "Well, I have this offer from this company over here, and I have an offer from Coke, and I need to make the right decision." And it was just turned. This kid was just turned up in knots about making the right decision. I thought, "Oh, this is just one of many. You know, don't stress yourself out." But he said, "This company over here, Company A, says to me, here's your path for the next 20 years. This is what you'll do. You'll spend 18 months here," and they had it all mapped out for him for at least the next 15, 20 years. He said, "This is what your path is." And he said, "And I talked to Coke," and Coke goes, "That's going to be up to you. We're going to let you define that path based on when you come into work, what do you love to do? Get to know yourself, really, truly self-actualize." And he said, "There was no path defined for me." And he said, "I'm struggling." It's just a reflection of what we mean when we talk about principle-based, because what I said was, I said, there's no way we would even begin to imagine knowing you well enough to chart out your the next 20 years for you. No way. No way do you. You know, I think I was sitting in the chair you're in, you know, much longer ago, but no way could someone have told me. I couldn't have told myself. I had no idea. So to think that somebody else could, you know, predict that with any sense of precision, I said, if I were you, if you take a bet on yourself, you're willing to bet on yourself, bet on yourself that you know you will figure out and you'll know what's better for you. And so that's just another way of coming into the organization. You know, there's no way we know where people are going to. We may know their starting place, but it's so freeing and empowering and inspiring for folks to have the opportunity to chart their own course. And it really is. It starts with what you and I've talked about, Bob, is this contribution motivated. You have to be contribution motivated first and have skills, capabilities, talents that the organization needs so we can apply that appropriately. But if you had that, it's that natural curiosity to learn, to know more about yourself, to help other people be successful. Continually looking for how do you make things better, both yourself and the people around you. So if you have that, that's the mix that works coming into something that there's no way somebody could have told me 18 years ago I'd be in this role today.
Gosh, Kara, I mean, I'm just lighting up like a Christmas tree. There's so much about what you're talking about that just makes me excited. And obviously, I was thrilled to have you come on because I knew some of this stuff. So, I mean, let's just start at the start. You guys do a talent draft. You're not trying to force people into roles. You're trying to find the best athletes that you can find. Then you'll find the position for them to play, which I think is, you might be a tight end, you might be a linebacker. All I know is you're tall, strong, and fast. And we can use people like that because we can't teach that. You come to the party with a lot of those attributes. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just one, brilliant how y'all think about that. Yep. Two is the sense of autonomy and self-actualization, which is the word that you use, which is you own your career. I don't own your career. You own your career. And, you know, for the right person, that is like music to them. Like, oh, you're going to give me the freedom to go paint my own picture? That is like, I didn't know you could go find that. That's amazing. Your intern cracks me up because you're right. Like, especially in the rapid pace of change, what's the average tenure for a job right now? 2.8 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to tell you for the next 15 or 20 years, they don't know what's going to happen in the next 15 or 20 days. And they're going to tell you the next 15 or 20 years, like it's linear. Like it couldn't be anything more nonlinear than it's like this crazy fractal these days. It can break in a million different ways. And I really want to talk about, you know, kind of this contribution motivated, because that's come up in our conversations multiple times. I want you to help people understand what that means. And then you talked about collaboration, wanting to help make people around you better, which is just a really strong ethos, because it counterbalances the, you know, I want to, you know, take my career where I want to take my career. You guys give me a lot of latitude to do that, but I can't win if everybody else isn't winning with me, which is really a powerful concept. But let's just go back, because this is so core to the DNA of the talent, is this contribution motivated. Can you unpack that for people a little bit
absolutely.
More what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'll tell you is we're not perfect at this either, Bob. And you and I've talked about that. This is not, I mean, we're continuing to try to improve and get better at this. And it's not for everybody. And that's what you'll find. Mm-hmm. And I found that through the time that I've been working with people here. Some people want that well-defined, give me the rule book.
Yes.
And there isn't a rule book. And we, you know, it takes courage to really get to self-actualize and get to know yourself better and know what you're going to be best at. And then have the courage to have the conversation to go, I'm in a role that I don't think I'm the best at. There's probably people who can do this better. And I don't love it. And, you know, I mean, that takes a lot of courage to just basically disrupt your role and talk about what you are good at, what you do like. And that's got some risk that you carry with it. But what we try and we really strive for is to build trust in the environment through our principles and our values to make sure we create that environment where every employee feels empowered to do that. Now, as I said, it's not perfect. It depends on people, and we are always striving to get better in this space. But if you think about somebody who comes to the door, first and foremost, is contribution motivated. They are coming in with a desire that, first of all, they're very self-aware. They know what they're good at, what they're not good at. They have a reality-based view of what they can do at that moment and where they need to help. And they're not afraid to admit that. They're going to ask for help. They're continually looking. It's this thirst for learning and improving. That is at the core, if you think about contribution and what that really means. They are continually seeking ways that they can increase their own contribution, as well as helping those around them. You know, some things that will just in this culture of principle-based management, if you have somebody who's hoarding knowledge or somebody who is doesn't really, you know, they want to get the credit. It's about the credit versus sharing knowledge. It shows up immediately because that is so inconsistent with who we are and how we expect people to behave. And so, you know, you have people who are contribution motivated. They may not have a skill that we need. Well, we're not going to bring them through the doors at Coke because that's going to be a waste. They need to go find a place that they can go use their skills. They have the core of being contribution motivated, but it has to be a skill that a capability that we need. So that's what it really is kind of in every person who comes through the door daily. I mean, I think about myself and people around me come to work every day thinking, how can I get better? How do I make myself better? How do I help the people around me get better? And you have to have this restless discontent with the current state to continue to get better and also have a lot of humility. And that is one of our core values is, you know, you have to own your mistakes and stand behind your teams. Mm-hmm. When there are mistakes that are made as we show up as servant leaders for our employees. So that's just a fundamental expectation of being part of Coke is that, and as we hire people, we are very diligent to make sure that we're looking for people who start first with contribution motivated. And so, and through our interview process, I mean, we go through quite a bit of rigor to assess that. get to know the person and get to know how, you know, how are they wired?
So very quickly, you used the word humility. It's funny, when I was writing the little bit that I said in my introduction of you, and I said the word grace, the other word I was fumbling with was humility. It was, mm-hmm. I mean, both of those, I think, really describe you as well. And, you know, I can see why you would be thriving in an environment that, you know, appreciates that kind of quality instead of sort of the social media. It's all about me and how can I promote myself kind of, you know, model versus no, together we're better than any one person. So we've kind of probably talked around all of them. And I don't mean to make this a test, so I've got it in front of me, but you know, there's five main principles, right? Do you mind just sort of sharing with folks, or I'm happy to start reading through them. We can just sort of tick them off one at a time.
Yeah. Let me clarify a little bit here. So we have what we call the five dimensions, and that's the PBM framework, principle-based management framework. Yep. And then we have this whole set of what we call principles of human progress. And there are many, many of those. And, you know, it's things like mutual benefit. It's things like bottom-up marginal analysis. Those are all things that we would call principles of human progress. And striving to kind of improve, but there's probably hundreds of those. But if you think about the five dimensions, that's the piece I think you're speaking to, Bob, is this: how do we apply those five dimensions? And it's core to how we work, how we make decisions, and how we think about everything and that we do. And so there's basically, if you think, you have to start with the vision. And if you think about, there's the five are vision, virtues and talents, knowledge, comparative advantage, and motivation. Those are the five. And so we use this as, I'll give you a very specific example. You know, if you're sitting with a business team and you're struggling through a problem, you're looking at what's wrong here? What are we doing wrong? You come back to those five dimensions and go, do we have the right vision? Do we have are we all kind of focused on the right thing? Do people really understand what we're trying to achieve? And oftentimes you go, well, you hear from people and it's like, everybody else thinks it's one thing and I think it's this and the leader thinks it's this. And it's like, we got a vision problem. We need to sit down and make sure we align on the vision. So, and make sure that is where we're headed and what we want to go. That's why vision, you got to start there. But when you're solving a problem inside a Coke and you're working, it doesn't matter what it is, you take those five dimensions and you could go, okay, we've got the vision right. We just don't have the right people. There's skills or there's capabilities or talents that we don't have. We got to step back and go, or maybe we don't have the work assigned to the right people. We might have the right people. We just don't have the work assigned in the right ways. And so how do we reassess that? And then, of course, knowledge. Do we have the right knowledge systems that are telling us where the opportunities are? You know, so you just tick through each one of those. Comparative advantage is who, you know, if you think about this, we do this quite a bit in terms of what we call the division of labor by comparative advantage. Sometimes you think about why is something not working? It's like, well, back to what I shared earlier, we got people who have, you know, gifts and aptitudes and things in one area, but they're not able to apply those because we've organized the work in a way in which it's not enabling that person to be at their best. So you kind of shift the team. It's always moving. If you think about comparative advantage, who is best positioned to do that work on the team? Figuring that out is really important, and where you align work. And the team's always changing. You're never done. And then, of course, motivation is really just trying to make sure, you know what motivates people. What are they going to be motivated by? We've done a lot of work in these five dimensions around evolution. The words have changed. Concepts are core, but the words to help people better connect. We are constantly, you may have read in some of the books, used to be market-based management, and last year we changed this to principle-based management very deliberately. Because it's about the principles of human progress that we're trying to make sure we instill and that we live by, and we come up, show up every day at work and everything we do, whether it's good times or bad times or tough, you know, challenges, you're going back to those principles. And I had this conversation yesterday, which I think is a great, doesn't matter where you sit or where you are. It's marginal analysis conversation. It's if you decide to work on that, there's a trade-off. You're not going to work on this. Is that the right thing for us to do as a capability? Is that what would bring the most value to our business? And so it's all intertwined in terms of it goes back to those principles of human progress. And it's, you know, there's many, but the five dimensions is in the framework is how we think about hiring people, making decisions, everything that we do. And so that's kind of what I shared with my interview process. This was embedded into that. Once I got into Coke, I was like, oh, I see what that was through the interview process. And so that's how we're trying to be as, you know, apply this and strive every day to come in and be better at helping people connect, because we truly believe, you know, that especially the role of a supervisor. We spend a lot of time talking about supervisors and the importance of a supervisor. And having been in other organizations, supervisors have a lot of responsibility, and in every organization, yes. And they carry a load. And I'll tell you the difference in being at Coke is your number one responsibility as a supervisor is to help other people develop and improve and be better. And mm-hmm. some people would say, well, my number one responsibility is this and the business results. Well, you're going to get that. We believe you're going to get those business results if you have the right people in the right roles working on the right things. And so that's really where we expect supervisors to spend their time, and that they invest in their people in a way that will deliver the business results.
You know, between the principles, that framework that you described, and then just as you're given all these examples, what's just so in stark contrast for me compared to so many of your peers at other companies is Coke is very focused on people. Right. And you're not fighting for a seat at the table. And, you know, how do you kind of get woven into the strategic initiatives of the business? By definition, you are highly integrated and key to how Coke looks at their business in totality. And so I'm just, you know, versus the processes and, you know, compliance and all the sort of more tactical things that the work needs to be done, but it's not necessarily of a strategic nature. And everything that you're saying keeps coming back to the person, humans. Like, how do people help drive this business because they are the business? And do you find when you're talking to your colleagues that your day at work feels very different than people that, you know, not your colleagues, but your peers at other companies?
It does.
Does your day feel different?
It does.
Talk about your work differently?
It does. It's interesting because I sit on a couple of CHRO kind of roundtables, and the things that they're focused on and the things that we're focused on are very different. So I find myself being a little bit of an outsider, and I'm okay with that. In fact, I enjoy that because I get to share, look, guys, here's how we're thinking about that. And I'll just take something that's, you know, highly charged and, you know, a lot of opinions on, but I was in one the other day and we spent way too much time on return to work. You know, and it was this theme of people coming back to work and, you know, people talking about rules and how they're doing it and mandates. And, you know, I said, guys, we took a principled approach to this. And I said, and it's not perfect. I said, but we expect people and supervisors and employees to work in a way in which we're going to get the most out of those employees and results. We want people back in the office working together, but we're not going to come out with the hard, you got to be in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, this is between that supervisor and the employee and the results, focusing in on the results. And again, it's this kind of churn on policies and you know, and having a set of rules versus Coke is very much guidelines. We have some guidelines. And like I said to you earlier, Bob, it's not for everybody. I had somebody early in my career come in to work at Coke, and he just came in and he said, I'm looking for the rule book. He goes, I can't operate in this. And it was an HR person who was trying to relocate someone or hire and relocate him. And he said, I need the rules on what our relocation policy is. And I said, well, here's a set of guidelines. Here's kind of what we think about in terms of you need to know the person. What do they value? What's important to them? You know, and so we had this conversation, but, you know, he said to me, he goes, I've come out of a very structured organization. I need the rule book. And I said, there's not going to be a rule book. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to.
Well, you know, you can see, I mean, it's funny because the Army is for some people and the Army's not for some people. And you can see where folks would self-select.
Oh, absolutely.
At a place like Coke. Yeah. Because, and there's no value judgment in that. It's just what's a style preference.
And they will be more successful somewhere else. Yeah. And so that would be wrong for them to stay at Coke or come to Coke, because it is not, like I said, it's not for everybody, and that's okay. And we want people to, you know us well enough, as well as us doing our own, you know, due diligence on that, to know it's the right company for me.
Something that could be a huge takeaway for listeners, I want to go back to what you're talking about with the emphasis on frontline management and supervisors. You know, employees just sort of at large seem to be stressed out these days. They're freaked out. You know, the pandemic didn't help anybody. There's a recession. There's fears about layoffs. There's money problems. I mean, people just, and then Gen Z is kind of all that dialed up a couple more notches.
Yeah.
How do you train? How do you empower your frontline folks to kind of be what they need to be for their employees, their colleagues?
Yeah. No, great question. And I wouldn't say that we've mastered that at all, but I'll tell you how we invest. And it's every day in terms of making sure, especially think about new supervisors coming in or being promoted or moving into a supervisor role Yes. from an individual contributor role. That's a big lift, and they have to understand kind of what that is. So, there's a lot of tools and sessions, and we don't do a lot of stand-up training. That's not it. You're really your supervisor. If you're a new supervisor, then your supervisor has a responsibility of making sure you understand your role, what's expected, and how to show up as a supervisor. And so, gosh, at Coke, I think we ran the numbers. I think we've got 16,000 supervisors around the globe. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of people to be practicing PBM. But man, if we can just pick one or two of those and you get it right, you got a supervisor who's helping another supervisor, it's powerful in terms of the progress that we make. And it's, you know, as we think about the role of a supervisor, it's practicing and teaching and modeling PBM. And so if somebody's done that really well for you, and I'll give you a great example. As I came, I was new to Coke and worked for a gentleman who has since retired. But it was interesting because my first probably 6 months here, I was a supervisor. My first 6 months here, really probably 90 days, we sat down. And I said, I think we might have made a bad call here. I said, I'm struggling in terms of I'm getting a lot of feedback. And I was getting, you know, feedback everywhere I turned. It's like, well, that's interesting. But here at Coke, we do it this way. And here's why we would think about it that way. And this is how we would think about it. So he and I sat down. And I said, I just want to be transparent. I said, I've never had this kind of feedback. And I said, I come in with some experience. And he said, look, I'm just investing in you. So you will be able to invest in others throughout your career. He goes, that is an expectation at Coke. You're going to get a lot of feedback. And that's the other thing that I think supervisors have the responsibility of bringing those people along, like myself, coming in mid-career to Coke and having been in a very structured environment, very different. And like I said, if he hadn't poured into me, I don't know that I would have been here either to help me understand kind of this is what we're looking for and this is what good is and this is how we think about this. Very different than some of the other organizations that are out there.
Yeah, you can see that taking somebody who's got so many of the right talent attributes, but has grown up in a different family with different rules. And it's like, well, I know that's how y'all did it over there, but here's how we do it here. There would definitely be, you know, a previous guest shared this line with me. I don't know if it's original to him or not, but I love the line, which is we want to be values aligned, but culturally an ad. And so what I take away even from what you're saying is like, look, values wise, we're aligned. Like you're a good fit for us from a values perspective, but there's things about our culture that, you know, you'll need to sort of pick up as we go, but I'm willing to invest in you because that part's teachable, but like, you know, making you contribution motivated. I don't know if I can make you do that. As I said earlier, you kind of come to the party with mm-hmm. some of those attributes. So,
Another example that's core to that, because most companies that I've been in and that I've worked for outside of Coke too and interviewed a lot of people is we have what we call a principle of challenge process. And so you think about challenge process and what does that really mean? And it's an expectation. So when I came in, and I've heard this from other people too, it's like you don't, if the senior leader's in the room, you don't really share your opinions or challenge or those kind of things. And at Coke, that was completely different. It was like I was getting feedback because I wasn't challenging. And I was like, well, I was waiting for that next conversation. It's like, no, no, this is the conversation. And so leaders have to create that environment where it pulls people in, and to invite that different opinions, those types of things. I mean, it's an expectation, which is just counter to so many different organizations that may be very hierarchy. Those conversations happen after the second meeting. And at Coke, there is second meeting. This is the meeting we put our thoughts, ideas, points of view, opportunities to do something better or different, or that's just an ongoing way in which we work, which is to assimilate to that takes a little bit of time.
So one of the things that we have talked about before that I just love about you and Coke is how you guys think about talent acquisition and diversifying a talent pipeline. When you've got, you know, six figures of employees, I was telling my wife before we started this, I'm like, if you had a company of 2,000 employees, that's a lot. 12,000 employees, that's a lot. 120, that's mind-blowing to me. But so you guys have the constant talent needs. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we've talked about is like ATSs have biases built into them. They're not necessarily designed for this more attribute-oriented recruiting that you guys do. The fact that you guys need to have a pretty wide open spigot of where talent might come from that may look a little non-traditional to some folks. Could we go down that lane for a few minutes? Because I love how you think about this and some of the things that y'all are trying.
Well, and you hear a lot about it now in the marketplace, kind of non-traditional or alternate pathways into work. And I will tell you, I would say Charles Koch was far ahead of the times of where we are today, because he was pushing on this years ago in a forecast of what's happening in the workforce and talent and kids entering college and coming out of college. And he had a desire and really pushed on us as an HR capability and leaders to say, we've got to be doing something different. If we're not, we will not be prepared for the future. We won't, you know, people are a huge part of how we get results. And so it's like, what are we doing differently? So I think that leadership commitment from the very top and pushing it enabled us to move faster and experiment more. And so what we've tried to do is really look across and figure out, where do we have these pockets of talent and capability where there's gaps, and open up the pathways, whether it's through second chance hiring, it's through apprentice programs. We kicked off a couple of apprenticeship programs, accounting and one in IT, and we're bringing people in, doing an aptitude assessment, and they may not have ever gone to college, may not have ever done accounting type of work, but there's an aptitude, they're contribution motivated, and there's an aptitude there. And we'll bring them in and train them for a short period of time. And typically in those sessions, those people are ready to go to work because they've got the contribution motivated and they have the aptitude. They're productive well before we expected them to be productive. And so it's an investment, though, back to, you know, being investing in people. We've done this a couple of ways, but I tell you, we haven't figured out how to scale it. We're doing it in pockets of various different disciplines, but we've got a long way to go. And I think as the world is changing, we're trying to shift. And this is one hiring supervisor at a time. There's not a huge way to go after it all at one time. I'd love to figure that out. We haven't figured that out. But it's that one supervisor at a time and going, look, you've always hired people that look like this. I want you to talk to this person. This person looks very different than what you've hired. And sometimes we've even said, I'm not going to give you a resume. I just want you to talk to this person because I think they have something. They're contribution motivated. And I think they have something that would be additive to your team. And that's a scary place because, you know, somebody who's done a lot of hiring throughout their career, they're like, give me the resume. I want to look at the credentials. And we're trying to shift that, Bob, from let's look at the person and don't worry about the credentials first. Let's understand who they are. What do they bring to this? And so we've got several programs that are running that way. But it really is one at a time. You know, our recruiters are very unique in that they're working with hiring supervisors to go, I know you want this, but we've got some folks who I think would be really additive to your team that may look very different. Are you willing to take some risk?
Question for you on that, which is, we had Joe Fuller, who is a professor of the Future of Work project at Harvard Business School. He's phenomenal. And we were talking about this, and he's like, look, a lot of companies, you know, for certain kinds of roles are like dropping the four-year college degree requirement. So on paper, their policy is, hey, for some of these roles, you do not need a college degree. But they're not actually being implemented because below the surface, there's still the fear that if I go and hire somebody who now looks non-traditional to who we might have hired previously and they don't work out, I'm going to get hit in the back of the head pretty hard. And so I'm, even though, again, nominally, I've got permission to do this, practically, I don't want to pay the price if it doesn't work out. How do you guys, if that's even something that would somebody would think there, how would you address that?
I would say that goes back to our principles. I mean, we want people to try things. We know we need to try things, and we know we need to fail. A very model of experimentation. And it's about, you know, we want people to be willing to take more risk. So if that were to happen in Coke, it has happened. We you know, it's happened to me in terms of failures and mistakes. There's nobody standing over you to go, shame on you for doing that. It's more of, what'd you learn? So what did you do? Was it well designed in terms of how you went about it, in terms of that particular scenario? Did you have the right structure around this person to be successful? And so it's not about a pointing finger at somebody. It's, what did we learn and how do we apply those learnings? Let's make sure if there's some key learnings in that decision, we socialize that. And you stand up and you share that as a badge of honor. Look, I tried this. Here's where we failed. This is what I learned. If you're going to do this, make sure you take those learnings and apply them somewhere, because that's really the difference. And because if you have an environment where it's like, gosh, if this doesn't work out, I'm toast. And I'm not. So who's going to take a chance on that? Who's going to put their, you know, who wants to move into that? That's what I try to tell people. That is what's different at Coke. We are expected to fail fast, and learn.
And learn.
I mean, to me, the benefit of that is if you just fail and you don't learn, you don't share those learnings. And same thing, whether you're hiring a person, you're taking a risk in that, or we've made business decisions within the Invista business. I was part of that group for years, and we invested in a business that just didn't work out. But at the time, we were all like, we think there's a path forward on this. And what happened is at the end, there wasn't. But what the expectation was of our leader, he went and shared why. We tried to get into a business line. It's like, this didn't work. And we gave it our best shot. But you know what? Sometimes you don't get it right. And we weren't bringing anything different to the table. And so that was something, though, that those leaders, not only were they asked to go share those learnings across other businesses, but they were rewarded for taking the stepping out and taking the risk and knowing when to call it. That's the other thing. Because sometimes you have people who go, gosh, I just don't want this to fail. I want this to work so badly. That doesn't work in the culture either. When you know it's not right, you got to raise your hand and go, we didn't get this right. That's a difference in cultures and how people show up when there are failures.
Yeah. Well, in culture, you know, we both know Johnny Taylor from SHRM, of course. And you know, Johnny says, you know, culture isn't really something that you talk about. Culture is just how things really happen, how things really get done. That is your culture. And so when when something doesn't work out the way that we had hoped that it would have worked out, and people see that she's not being crucified for it, and in fact, you know, is taking a leadership role in sharing the learnings to everybody else, and you know, is, you know, keeps moving forward in their career. That's the culture. Mm-hmm. That's the culture.
It is.
So
it's how you show up every day.
Real quick, one of my favorite things about y'all is the story about Richard, and I think that he's such a good example of somebody that, you know, came from a non-traditional background. And do you mind sharing that with folks? Because I think it's very inspirational and very reflective of how y'all do what you do.
Yeah, and Richard's great, and he's advanced his career since he joined Coke. So he's a great story to talk about. But it's on LinkedIn and other places too. You can see this as he's told, telling his story in his words. But I won't do it as much justice as he would. Let me tell you. But he ended up while he was in college, became incarcerated, and he was serving his time there. Was here in the front of the building and was on a detail where they were picking up garbage and things around the streets. And so he saw the building, didn't know who we were, and so he was trying to pursue his education through the while he was incarcerated. And you know, he kept wondering what was in this building. I believe as he told it, he asked his mother to bring him all the books that she could find on Charles Koch. He wanted to read and learn more about Charles Koch, and so he did. And as he was working outside the building, he said, "I thought one day I'm going to work in that building." And so he went through his incarceration and finished that, was released. But before he was released, he was in a work release program. He came to work for Koch. And it was because one of the gentlemen on our recruiting team who supports our military, he reached out, wrote a letter, and it ended up on his desk. And he got to know Richard, spent some time with him, talking to him. And same thing we've just talked about all morning, which is contribution motivated, huge desire to improve his own situation and learn and grow. I mean, he was there. He had all that, what skills, and he had gotten his degree. I'm not exactly sure what his degree was in. He had switched it at one point. But so he has been, and he came in to the team and began working. And you know, it became time to, okay, how do you help him connect to the rest of the team, and so they know that people, you know, don't have judgment or bias. And so he was great about it. I think he said, "Let me tell my story." And he told his story to his team. Here's what happened to me. Here's how I ended up. But it takes somebody like the recruiter and the hiring supervisor who said, interviewed him, talked to him about kind of his history, his background, what he'd done, his what he had learned, skills, and said, "I'll take a bet on him." And so we brought him in. And like I said, I think his work has continued and continued to grow. His role and his responsibilities, and he's an inspiration to most. And whether or not that's been your path or not your path, he's an inspiration.
Well, I love that story on so many levels. You know, when we're working with our clients at Career Club, you know, he's actually demonstrating a lot of things. Like, you know, he got focused. He's like, "Who's that company? I want to know more about them." He got curious. "Oh, Mom, bring me some books. I want to read more about this guy. I want to do my homework. I want to be prepared." Mm-hmm. Right? He was proactive. He reached out to somebody. He didn't wait for somebody to reach out to him. He reached out, and it ended up on that person's desk. He was persistent. I mean, just so many of those. He was courageous. Like he owned his life, mm-hmm. you know, warts and all, yep. and said, "You know what? But that's the future that I want, and I'm going to go for it." And, you know, for so many candidates, just kind of speaking to those folks right now, it's like, take a few pages out of Richard's book here. You own your career, nobody else. It's not perfect. Nobody's got a perfect career. Neither is yours. That's okay. Define who you want to work for. How do you want to contribute? And then start to build relationships with those people. Don't wait for them to reach out to you. Reach out to them. Do your homework. Be curious. Like, all those things are highly differentiated behaviors. And as somebody that looks after, you know, a very large workforce, you know, you're reinforcing, we love those qualities. Those qualities are rewarded at a place like this. And that's why I draw so much inspiration from Richard's story.
Yeah. And we should probably send that to you, because he tells it so much better than I did in the few minutes. Been saying, and put it on your page, because it is really good. And he walks through it in great detail, and how he ended up here. And it's just inspiring. And there's several others of those around from various different pathways that, you know, and I'll tell you a great example, and just in HR, for folks who are in HR. I mean, you know, we think about HR, people coming up through the ranks in HR. And I have a person who's on my team who came from IT. We have a VP of HR in one of our businesses who was a CIO, and she came over to be an HR vice president in one of our businesses. And And so it's just refreshing when you have somebody coming from different businesses into the HR capability or going out, vice versa. We've got a lot of the others. And so it's just, what do you bring? What you bring into that role, most of the time, is transferable. If you think about it, if you're really, truly contribution motivated and you've got some skills. And so we try to demonstrate that with folks like Richard or others coming in externally. But internally, you think you got a workforce of 120,000 people. We hope people can find their next role inside of Coke with the diverse portfolio of companies that we have. So we work pretty hard to make sure that we're trying to, you know, tell people, yes, you're self-actualizing and you're finding things that you love, don't love, or you're in a role that's not the right role for you. You know, don't give up. There's opportunities inside Coke, so let us help you. We established what we call a navigator that works with internal folks because sometimes it's hard to find, probably sometimes harder to find roles inside than outside companies. And so it's like, this is an opportunity to make sure we're asking people to self-actualize when they're going through this, talking to their supervisor, talking to HR, and then instilling this kind of navigator to help navigate the multitudes of companies and roles and opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds very cool. I want to start wrapping this up out of respect for your time because I'd like to stay with you all day. I love all this stuff. And you can answer this one of two ways. I usually like to ask guests, you know, if you were talking to the 28-year-old version of yourself with the benefit of hindsight, how would you counsel yourself? Or give them the benefit of your experience, how do you counsel your girls as they're kind of early in their life and thinking about what a career might look like for them?
Yep. And it's probably the same. The answer is probably the same. It's funny because you ask it that way. But, you know, for me at 28, it was, you know, what I know now and what I know didn't know then, I think, gosh, if I just slow down, enjoy the journey, take time to take all of that in and not be so concerned about that next role, that next opportunity. Are you going to make it? Or what's it going to be? What's it going to, you know, are you going to, you know, what is that going to look like? Stay focused on what's in front of you and love it or make a change. And if you're not loving it, don't be afraid to go, well, I'm on this path, so I need to stay on this path. The path has got many different twists and turns. That's kind of how I think about it when I think about the question for me, because it was run hard, go find what's next, learn, you know, what's that next opportunity. And I don't know that I enjoyed as much as I enjoy now today. When your runway looks a lot shorter than it does when you're 28, you can't see it. Now you can say, gosh, you know, I enjoy it more today than I did when I was 28. Love what I do. And as far as my daughters, I continue to ask them, just pursue your passion. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it looks like mine or your dad's or anybody else. I mean, you are your own person and you are unique. And so you need to find what you love. And you're not going to find it in the job one or job two, but you're going to learn something about yourself. Same kind of advice, Bob, that as I talk to interns every year, and I love spending time with the interns. Makes me feel very old, but I love spending time with them. And they're so in that pace of what's next. And I said, just enjoy. There's no bad decision you're going to make at 23. There's just no bad decision, you know, this job, that job, but go do it, learn and go, okay, I know I don't want to do that. And I know I want to do that. You'll learn so much about yourself. So I think it's just that pace and take the time to enjoy and learn about yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's phenomenal. As young people, you know, they don't know even what their choices are. So sometimes it's just a test for negatives, right? Well, I tried that's not me. Okay, well, check that one off the list. We know that one's not for you, and why, and how does that start to inform what you do like to do, which is very good. It's very, very good advice. And the other piece that you said is the self-actualization. It basically comes back to self-actualization. Find what you really enjoy doing. And you're probably going to have to play a few instruments before you find the one that you're good at, or play a few sports before you. But when you do, you're going to flourish because you're going to have to keep learning. You talked a lot about curiosity and knowledge and continuing to grow. And you're going to be much better at that if it's something you're actually interested in. and not being, what I got to learn.
Yeah, and not being afraid. This is something I hear too, about afraid of making a bad decision or a bad, you know, getting into a role you don't like. I see that as a gift. And that's what I tell kids all the time that are entering the workforce. Hey, if you got into this job, they'll come and talk and say, I'm struggling. I don't like this work. And I said, that's great. Then what do you like? You know, that's a good problem. Let's talk about that, because instead of just doing it, but it's stopping and knowing yourself well enough to know, I'm going to create more value and maximize my contributions if I'm doing something that looks like this versus this. I think that is a huge win, especially early in your career.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up because this has been just fantastic, Kara. I knew that it would be, and I appreciate everything that you have shared with people. I think the call to action in this one is, if you want to go work at a phenomenal company, go check out the career options at Koch Industries. I just can't say enough good things. And Kara, you're such a great ambassador for the brand, and you've lived it. You know, you're a product of it, and you do just a wonderful job of communicating it. And I appreciate what you shared with everybody today. It's been wonderful.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm still on the journey of learning, just like everybody else. So, but thank you. It's been a pleasure, Bob.
Awesome. And everyone, thank you so much. If you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe, like, comment. It really helps. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast platform, please rate and review. But we thank you for investing a few minutes of your day today. And again, Kara, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I know you're gonna find it. You've got all